Welcome in. You're listening to the weekend edition of the Cornell Economics Report. Corey and I are, we got a really great show planned for you today. We're going to spend the first hour talking with folks from the Mises Institute. I'm going to spend the second hour talking about more along the lines of hard assets and economics, etc. But we're going to start out with our friend Jeff Deist, of course, and Dr. Mark Thornton. Dr. Thornton has been a, well, let me just give you a little bit of background of him. He is a PhD economist, got his PhD from Auburn University. He then taught economics at Auburn for a number of years. Additionally, he was serving as the founding faculty advisor for the Auburn University Libertarians. I think I'm in good company. Corey, being a Canadian, I'm not really sure, but I got to tell you, man, I know that I'm in good company here. Dr. Thornton, we would really like to chat a little bit about kind of the topic du jour right now on a daily basis, certainly in economic circles, and that is, you know, the various bubbles that are occurring around the world. What are your comments on that?
Well, we live in a world of bubbles right now. The Federal Reserve has a zero interest rate policy with quantitative easing, and all of the central banks around the world, all the major ones, are following suit. Japan, China, Euro, all the major central banks have this inflationary policy of zero interest rates. So they're, in effect, blowing bubbles all over the place. And in the United States, we have a bubble in the stock market. We have a bubble in the bond market. We have a bubble in agricultural land in the Midwest. We have bubbles in real estate in Manhattan. We have a bubble in the contemporary art market. So bubbles are everywhere around us, and most people have no idea.
Dr. Thornton, I think you're right in many cases right there, that bubbles are all around us. The one thing I find interesting, too, is that, you know, we do have these bubbles in these areas, but it's not creating jobs either. So it's really this disparity between bubbles forming due to created money and people benefiting from these bubbles. It seems like only the rich are benefiting from each of these bubbles. So what do you think are some things that people should look for in these bubbles, maybe before they pop or if they have the potential to keep on running?
Well, you're exactly right, Corey. The money that the Federal Reserve is injecting into the economy goes into certain people's hands, and right now it's the big banks, Wall Street, hedge funds. That's who's getting the money first, and that's who's getting rich first. And that's why Manhattan real estate prices are at all-time record highs. That's why contemporary art prices are at all-time record highs, because he who gets the money gets to see the greatest benefit of it. The money's not getting out into mainstream the economy, so that it's not positively having any positive effects on the vast majority of the population. And so even though they're introducing a lot of money, the grand majority of the American population is not benefiting in terms of jobs and higher wages. We have 50 million Americans on food stamps. We have 15 million Americans unemployed or underemployed, and many millions more who don't have the same level of business flow of funds as they once did. And so it's not surprising that the monetary inflation isn't showing up in the consumer price index, because the average consumer does not have extra money. And so that's why this bubble the Fed is blowing is so lopsided in favor of the rich and the wealthy and the finance class, and why the rest of America is not doing well and the economy is not growing.
Why would the left wing be doing that, Dr. Thornton?
Well, the large corporations control the country. They give enormous sums to Congress, millions and millions of dollars, for example, just during the recent rewriting of Dodd-Frank. The big banks and Wall Street send millions of dollars to our congressmen, and so our congressmen and senators act on their behalf rather than in the best interest of the country. Of course, they don't know any Austrian economics. They don't know what's causing the problems in this country, and so they're just following the money.
So let's take it one step further here, guys, that we know that there are bubbles in the U.S. We also know that there are bubbles in almost every economy around the world right now because of their money printing. So why are all the countries following suit and creating all these bubbles?
Well, this is a world currency war. The central banks are trying to engineer economic growth by reducing the purchasing power of their own currency. The idea here is to increase the money supply, reduce the value of your currency, and that supposedly makes your exports more attractive, and so you create jobs in export-related industries, manufacturing, agriculture, and so forth. But everybody is trying to do this, and Japan is trying to do this, Europe is trying to do this, China is trying to do this, and so it's a worldwide effort. And the list of central banks that have easy monetary policy is practically every central bank in the world, from Norway to Switzerland, Japan, Korea. They all have the same policy because they're in this world currency war trying to take a beggar thy neighbor policy of making your neighbor worse off by reducing the value of your currency.
So it's not really a monkey see, monkey do type situation, although some would classify it at that, but it's more of a defensive reaction. You simply have to, you've got to maintain the value of your currency if you're going to maintain any level of economic growth whatsoever, I would think. Kind of moving to a different segment, you know, you alluded to what's going on, for example, on Wall Street right now, and I find it interesting that there is so much money being made in a situation, and let's use the S&P as an example. There is so much money being made on a situation where there really isn't, I would argue, any fundamental value whatsoever in many of the components that people are investing in, components of the S&P or the Dow or what have you. Any comments on that?
Well, I think that Japan, the United States, and Europe are aggressively acting in this world currency war, where the other countries like Korea and Norway and Switzerland are acting in more of a defensive fashion. So when you look at the S&P 500 or other stock indexes, what you see is very, very high prices, very large valuations for those indexes. And the reason for the earnings side for the S&P 500 is that their cost structure right now is very low based on what the Federal Reserve is doing. If Microsoft or Johnson & Johnson can go out and issue 10-year bonds for less than 2% interest rate, it means the cost of their financing is much lower. And so their capital costs are lower, their labor costs are lower because of the glut in the labor market. They're not having to offer higher wages and benefits and salaries because of the weak labor market. So, and also in terms of their consumer base, you know, the Federal Reserve and their policies of low interest rates is encouraging consumption and discouraging savings. And so there still is somewhat of a consumer out there for these products, but it's mostly the impact on the cost side of lower interest rate costs and lower labor costs, and then simply the fact that the low interest rate drives up capital goods and capital assets. And so if you do take some financial formulas and you reduce the interest rate to zero, that really increases the market valuation of stocks and bonds, basically because, you know, the average American can't turn to savings account, can't turn to certificates of deposit, can't turn to government bonds. They're going into junk bonds. And so the spread between governments and junk bonds is very, very low. And that's just another sign of what the Fed is doing, distorting the economy.
Well, they're distorting the economy, and when one realizes that 49% of the members of our economy are dependent on the government in some fashion, you really begin to realize the gravity of this situation. Stick around. We're going to be right back. We're going to be talking about more issues discussed by the Mises Institute.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of the Colin Economics Report. Al and myself are joined again by Dr. Mark Thornton, as well as one of our co-hosts, Jeff Dice. Jeff, I know that you have a couple questions for Dr. Thornton, so take it away.
Well, Corey, we were just talking off air about the phenomenon of asset bubbles, and I'm curious to get Mark's perspective on the cure to asset bubbles, which Austrians have identified, actually pre-Austrians have identified a concept of market clearing. And this is, of course, something that's very painful and something that governments and central banks try assiduously to avoid. But I was just hoping that Mark could elaborate on what is, in fact, the cure to the bubbles that government and central banks create.
That's a great point. And it's a point that really distinguishes the Austrian economist and the Austrian school from mainstream economists, because mainstream economists at the Fed or the Treasury or other government agencies They have a fear, a psychological fear of deflation or falling prices. They think that if prices are falling in an economy, that's really bad. And so they're kind of unique because everybody else basically likes falling prices. If you, you know, if you go to Walmart, you see people loving lower prices. But for mainstream economists, this is the worst thing that could possibly happen. And Paul Krugman will tell you that if we get into deflation, there'll be a deflationary spiral into a black hole from which we'll never, ever return. The Austrians have a completely different view of deflation. Deflation is the process, the market process, by which the economy fixes itself after having gone through a bubble where a lot of bad investments were made. And so the deflationary process, look what happens in an economic crisis and a collapse in the economy. Well, the prices of capital goods, stocks, warehouses, farmland, and so forth, they collapse maybe as much as 90%. The cost of labor, the price of labor, also collapses, but not by as nearly as much. And then finally, consumer goods, they fall in price, but not very much at all, because consumers still have to buy food and gasoline and milk and toilet paper and so forth. So consumer good prices don't fall as much relative to the price of capital goods and labor. So what kind of scenario is that? Well, the deflationary process of letting market prices find their proper level presents entrepreneurs with a situation where they can buy capital goods really cheap. There's plenty of labor of all sorts available at lower wages, and yet consumer goods, the prices of them are still relatively high. So the deflationary process essentially creates profit opportunities for entrepreneurs to hire capital and hire labor in order to produce the consumer goods that people want at that point in time. And so the deflationary process, rather than being spiraling a death spiral into a black hole, we actually view it as like a shock absorber. The economy collapses, entrepreneurs fix it, and it springs right back into action. And so if you look at the typical American business cycle, when the Fed didn't get involved very much, or before we had a Fed, all of those crises were typically lasted only a few months. And so if the Fed hadn't gotten involved, if we didn't bail out all the institutions that failed us in this latest crisis, we wouldn't be talking about this crisis. It would have been long over, and we would have been done with it.
Here's the interesting question. You know, we're in a situation right now. I probably have a few years on the three of you guys, and you know, I've seen a lot of things happen from an economic standpoint throughout the world over the last, certainly in my professional career anyway, which has been, you know, a good 45 years or thereabouts. But I never in my wildest dreams ever thought I would see the U.S. economy and other major economies in the world based on nothing more than a house of cards. I think the only thing that's keeping our economies going right now is, deep down inside, most people realize this, and it really has become a matter of self-preservation. Fundamentals don't seem to mean very much. Would you agree with that?
Well, I agree that the Federal Reserve has really screwed up this economy. It's distorted prices beyond recognition, and we have a currency that it has no ties to any tangible fundamental value, and we're not really sure how much of it's out there. Who has it? The Federal Reserve's own balance sheet has been bloated to almost $3 trillion. So, yes, they've distorted our economy so that we don't have any really good feel for the fundamentals of our economy anymore. And I think that scares a lot of people, and I think that's correct, that you should be concerned about the fundamental basis of this economy free-floating in the air. During a world currency war, things can go awfully wrong.
Dr. Thornton, I agree with you that during this currency war, things can go awfully wrong, and we are inflating these bubbles to higher levels. Like you said, a little pullback or some deflation would be very natural and healthy for the economy. But the further we inflate these bubbles and this further wealth gap that we're experiencing, it makes these deflationary periods even more harmful to the people. So how much longer do you think we can continue to go with these bubbles inflating before really this deflationary period could just turn into an all-out horrible recession for everybody involved?
Well, that's what I was saying earlier. If they had just let things go in 2007, By the end of 2008, everything would have cleared itself up. And we would have, you know, had bankrupt institutions. Banks would be going through bankruptcy processes. We'd be winding up things at Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Detroit would be reorganized with fewer firms and a lower wage structure. And we would be on our way back to prosperity. As it is right now, I think that the pain is going to be significantly more widespread. And I think it's going to be more severe. And the way they're handling things is just god-awful, basically, because I know, you know, when they announced the they were going to taper their quantitative easing, you know, markets were jostled by that, but they basically were able to digest that. And the fact that they decided not to taper, they tampered with a taper, I think is a very bad sign, because they've set up expectations which are likely that the Fed is going to try to continue to blow bubbles and increase the money supply to try to keep what their view is in the works, basically. So, and Ben Bernanke's replacement, Janet Yellen, is just as dovish, is just as much of an inflationist, and doesn't understand how the economy restores itself. They think by printing money and going deeper into debt that that's somehow an economic cure. Austrians think that you balance the budgets and you allow the price system to work. And historically and theoretically, that is the case. That is what works.
You know, of course, that's what works. And you're making so much common sense. I find it amazing that people with the educational background of somebody like Paul Krugman, as an example, really, really isn't really more in the same camp that the four people who are involved in this conversation are in. It is absolutely amazing to me, and the only rationale I can see behind that is I think that everybody truly realizes how bad things are. Some people are waiting for a miracle, which I don't think will ever happen, and I have to say, I think it's a matter of self-preservation, and I think that is false.